Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, when we left you on Friday here on the Steve Jones Show, it was kind of an optimistic weekend. Had a lot of great things going on with the NBA, NHL, and of course the World Cup as well. And kind of turned a little bit sad with the passing of Chuck Knoll on Friday night, the Hall of Fame head coach of the Steelers in the 70s and in also a little bit in the early 80s as well. We'll have Andy Russell coming up in the next about 20 minutes, former Steeler, talking about his head coach.
Yep, he's actually an important guy to have on because he's a transitional guy from when the Steelers were lousy to obviously greatness. We don't need to talk about how they've transitioned to the 27th best roster in the league, but that's all right.
Yeah, let's leave that out of the conversation.
Did you see that?
I didn't see the number, no, but I can't say I'm surprised right now.
I don't know which report put it out. I don't recall. They had Seattle was one, San Francisco was two, Denver was three. I remember Arizona was nine, Kansas City was 10. The Steeler roster was rated 27th. And
how many teams are in the NFL again? Just kidding.
32.
Just kidding. I know.
But you know what's interesting about that, though, is if you take 9 Arizona and take 27 Pittsburgh, do you know what 9 through 27 all have in common?
No.
They're all 8-8 rosters.
Okay.
They're all 8. All right. And that's when Pete Rozelle went through all this and he talked about parity and everything else that goes with it back in the 60s and 70s and, you know, parity, you know, getting toward parity. He talked about that over and over and over again, right? Well, that's where you are now in this league. I think if you take 9 Arizona, 10 Kansas City, and by the way, Cleveland's roster was 24th, 3 ahead of the Steelers. That'll drive you nuts.
Listen, they're a lot ahead of the Steelers on that roster. Cleveland being 3 ahead, that's not a number that scares me. If they were about 10 ahead, then I'd be a little bit upset.
Well, they got the better quarterback.
The bar isn't set really high right now in Cleveland.
No, I meant Cleveland is the better quarterback.
More dynamic. Oh, give me a break. You know
more
that's
dynamic,
not right.
More dynamic, exciting.
Oh, yeah, he's exciting, all right. Plays with a stack of money as a cell phone. That's what I want my quarterback to do. Just like I want him riding around Pittsburgh without a helmet on and his motorcycle, all right? Ben learned that lesson, unfortunately, the hard way, but fortunately, something he was able to recover from. Listen, young quarterbacks need to take a class on how to be smart, I think. At least some of them, anyway.
Well, here's where young quarterbacks have an issue. Young quarterbacks have an issue because they're young, and they don't realize they're the face of the franchise.
And they're not invincible.
No, but they also don't realize that.
No, you're right. Yeah,
they come in. They think they're another player. You're in the National Football League. You're not another player. You're just not. And you have to understand that the face of the franchise brings with it a little more responsibility than being the third round defensive tackle choice out of Texas A&I. Just the way. I mean, and they have to understand that they have to get that. when it comes to the first guy you think of in a franchise, who do you think of? I mean, who's the? I mean, the 49ers have a lot of great players: Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman, Frank Gore. Who's the player you think of right away when you think of the San Francisco 49ers?
Right, that's the guy underneath center, right? Yeah,
Colin
that's
Kaepernick. Exactly right. I mean, and they have, and I just listed the guys that are. Especially Bowman and Willis, they're in the argument as being the best players of their position in the league. A lot to talk about. San Antonio wins the NBA championship. Now we're about to go through an interesting phenomenon where nobody will talk about the champions.
Yeah, they'll only talk about LeBron.
And they'll talk about the Heat. Will they break up? What, you know. The order will be, what will LeBron do? What will the Heat do? What will Carmelo do? We're going to be a lot of Melo, Melo, Melo. Most of America doesn't give a darn where Melo goes, except for the mothership. Mothership cares. And no one. Now, San Antonio, to me, will not be, I can't say they're the favorite to repeat because it's not a young team at three critical spots, Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan. I mean, that's another 100-plus game grind with another year under their belt. They're going to be really, really good because San Antonio is always really, really good. And most college coaches do not like that. The college coaches like to control a lot of things, but the one thing they can't control is obviously the viewing habits of their players. A lot of college coaches don't like their players watching the NBA. I think they would love to have them watch how the Spurs play. Spurs defensive rotations, ball not touching the floor on offense, team basketball, the ability, you know, not to have the ball stick and move, go, go, go.
I know a lot of high school coaches that don't want their kids watching the NBA.
Well, exactly. But they would want them to watch the San Antonio Spurs.
Sure.
The Spur and the way the Spurs play. Brand of basketball.
Would you agree that they might, they obviously they are now, but coming into the playoffs, they were the best team in the NBA?
I said that. I picked them to win it. I picked them to win it back in when we did this thing in, what, November. You said, oh, yeah, another. I said, no, I think San Antonio's going to win it. So, I mean, I thought the Spurs were the best team all season long. The problem is they play in San Antonio, and they are not flamboyant. They're just good.
They just play basketball.
Yeah. Now, will they be the favorite for next year? They'll be one of the favorites because, look, I mean, one of the you look at the four. If you're going to pick the four greatest franchises in NBA history, you'd pick the Celtics, the Lakers, the Bulls, and I think now you have to say the San Antonio Spurs. You're talking about 17 championships, 16 championships, 6 championships, 5 championships. I mean, the 5 championships over a 16-year span, remarkable.
I was going to say it was a short time, too.
Well, 15 years is not a short time. That's why I say they're among the best. They have 5 over 15 years. The Bulls had their 6 and 8 years. The Celtics have their 17, you know.
Yeah, but
50s, 60s,
yeah,
70s, but
again,
80s, 2000s.
The Bulls, to me, were an anomaly. I don't think you're going to see that in the NBA again. Whereas, you know, 5 and 15 years, I don't think is too bad for San Antonio. I just think the Bulls were just the right time, the right mix in the NBA, and how they kept them together as long as they did, I'll never tell you.
Well, the Bulls won 6 and 8 years. And you know, obviously, it helped when they got. It helped when they got Pippen, and they added in and so forth. The Spurs they've kept together. I mean, and they have not won fewer than 50 games in the season since Duncan got there. which is remarkable unto itself because two of those years were lockout years. In a lockout year, you still won 50 games? That's amazing. That is amazing. And I look at, you're talking about sustained, long-term sustained excellence. The Celtics had long-term sustained excellence. 50s, 60s into the 70s, rebuilt with Bird into the 80s. Long-term sustained excellence. The Lakers, long-term sustained excellence. I think the Spurs have had long-term sustained excellence as the third best franchise in the history of the NBA for long-term sustained excellence. They're certainly better than the Knicks, who get more publicity.
Well, that's because they're in New York.
Right.
You know, you mentioned the lockout, and not to change gears, but it reminded me. That was the first thing I thought of this morning when I heard of the passing of Tony Gwynn. I thought of the strike in 94 and how I'm positive he would have hit 400 that year. But you know what I liked the most? There were all sorts of questions. You know, do you think he would have hit 400? You know, are you upset that the strike happened? Never heard him complain about it. Never heard him complain about, you know, losing a shot at a rare feat in Major League Baseball. And that really, that really sums up, you know, to me, Tony Gwynn as a player and as a person.
And the other part, he only had one season where he hit under 300. That was his rookie season. All the other years in his career, he hit over 300.
That's an amazing stat.
And I think the four best pure hitters that I've seen in the last 30 years would probably be Tony Gwynn, Ichiro, Don Mattingly, and Jimmy Rollins. Now, I mean, Wade Boggs. I had to throw that Jimmy Rollins thing in there for you.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. Who, by the way, Welcome. Is now the all-time hit leader in Philadelphia.
Hey, he's your man.
I'm not going into it.
Gwynn is one of the four best pure hitters I've watched the last 30 years. Ichiro, Wade Boggs, Mattingly, and Gwynn. I mean, amazing. Remarkable.
But the way he handled himself is what I thought about.
Altiberto Santos played for the State College Spikes. Really good hitter, too. He's a 300 hitter a few years ago with the Spikes. Played at San Diego State for Tony Gwynn. And I talked to him about Tony Gwynn. He said, great teacher, patient, enthusiastic. He said, a guy that always, he said everybody wanted to run through a wall for him. He's only 54 years old, Kevin. That's the hard thing. We're going to talk about Chuck Knoll in the next half hour, but Chuck Knoll was 82. And Chuck Knoll had Alzheimer's. In some ways, you know, Chuck Knoll, it's a celebration of life. It was merciful that he passed. Because, believe me, whenever an Alzheimer's patient passes, I can tell you from personal experience, there is great sadness and there is great relief. For Tony Gwynn, 54, awful. Awful.
You know, I read somewhere that Tony Gwynn was one of the only players not to have been struck out by Maddux and hit over 300 against him.
Well, now he hit 352 in his career against the Braves, you know.
Wow.
352.
And that was a time when the Braves were pretty darn good.
Yeah. I mean, that tells you where. I mean, Tony Gwynn, you know, and the Padres, Gwynn, Ichiro, and Boggs all could have been, if they wanted to, 400 home run guys. All had 20-year careers, all could have hit 20-plus home runs a year. So you get to 400, right? Yet they understood that it was best for them and best for their teams that they use foul line to foul line, and getting on base was exponentially valuable.
He struck out 434 times in over 10,000 career plate appearances.
Right.
Wow.
one of the truly great hitters in the history of the game, period. It's amazing how two of the greatest hitters ever, both San Diego guys, Tony Gwynn, Ted Williams, Andy Russell on Chuck Knoll next, a transitional figure. Chuck Knoll changed Andy Russell's foot position.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Made him a better linebacker.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy family, they've been taking care of the Valley's insurance needs for decades. And not only that, they've done a wonderful job over the years of giving back. So check them out. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We're also in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And they'll schedule this half hour to have Andy Russell with us on the show. Did you disappear?
No, I'm still here.
Okay.
Yes, we are indeed expecting Andy Russell in this half hour.
Good. Well done. So you're the one that set it up. I was kind of hoping you'd help me out a little bit here.
Yes, you are correct.
Okay. Talk about the passing of Chuck Knoll. Chuck Knoll, I mean, look. You saw Greg Popovich last night. It was like Greg Popovich stayed back by the scoring table. He never once went up on the stand with everybody else. You notice that at the end of the game? Players were up there. You know, the owner had to accept the trophy, so he was up there, and then he got out of there, and then it was the players' moment. Chuck Knoll never sought the limelight, never, you know, he just obviously loved coaching and treated his men like men. And not only that, but I've always looked at the Steeler dynasty of the 4 and 6 years as the most significant one of all. I know the Packers won 5 and 7 years with Lombardi, but the Steelers did it in an interesting time because they won their first two when the rule set. And the way they won stylistically, great defense with White, Greenwood, Holmes, Green, Lambert, of course, Jack Ham, Andy, Mike Wagner, Edwards, JT Thomas, Mel Blount. And, of course, the offensive line to go with Harrison Blyer. Bradshaw certainly was big arm, not, you know, but still maturing into that arm and maturing into being that quarterback. But then they changed the rules in the middle, and Don Shula and the rules committee worked very, very hard to change the rules of the game. Wide open, more passing, no contact downfield, and so forth. And the Steelers were the first team to absolutely take advantage of that, and they changed their style of play offensively. You know, Bradshaw had matured and become a far more complete quarterback. Lynn Swann, graceful, dynamic. John Stallworth, underrated early in his career, and then just made one big play after another. And the Steelers were the team that in the middle of a rules change, adapted, and it told you everything about Chuck Noll as a coach. He coached the team to the talent that he had to win. Wow. Tells you a lot.
You know, Steve, you had mentioned that Chuck Noll kind of changed Andy Russell's stance as a linebacker, and a couple of years ago, he actually commented on that, as an NFL coach.
One of the great learning situations is trying to teach a player a particular technique or a response and the feedback that you get from them. And I would be ever grateful and thankful because the path to some very good things happened because of these people.
Thought that was interesting the way he worded that, talking about the feedback from players as well.
Right. Well, Jack Ham has told me many times what it meant to him to play alongside Andy Russell. And that's, to play outside linebacker and the great influence Andy Russell was on him in his career. So, but Andy Russell, you have to remember, when Chuck Noll got there, when you're a mediocre football team, and the Steelers for decades, with an exception here or there, were a mediocre football team. I mean, 4 decades of Rooney ownership to that point had led to more mediocrity than anything else. It was a really cool thing one year. They went to the, quote, playoff bowl. Are you kidding me? The playoff bowl used to be for the two teams, the one that finished in second place in the Eastern Conference of the NFL would play the second place team from the Western Conference. And they would play in Miami, I believe it was. It was called the playoff bowl. And they only had it in the 60s when the AFL was there and so forth. But I think the money went to the pension fund or something like that. I think that's what they did with it. And what was interesting about that was that, they really weren't interested in putting a team there. But in Miami, eventually the AFL did. But, I mean, that was the Steelers' claim to fame. The one year they were good enough to get to the playoff bowl. That's how tough it was. And then Chuck Noll came in, and Chuck Noll, look, he goes 1-13 his first year. All right. And they drafted Joe Green and went 1-13. So he goes 1-13. His second year, they go 5-9, I believe. His third year, they went 6-8. Now, in today's NFL, if you go 1-13, 5-9, 6-8, what's the fate of the coach? I mean, really? If a coach came in and took over the Pittsburgh Steelers today, you're a Steeler fan, and they go 1-13. I just take all the names off the table. They're 1-13. That's a 14-game season, obviously. 1-13, 5-9, 6-8. What would you say after the 6-8 season?
The 6-8 season, I would be like, something has to be done. And if the season got worse than that, I would be looking to change the name at the top of the list as far as head coach.
And those are Chuck Knoll's first three seasons. But that's how dire things were in Pittsburgh at that particular time. Andy went through the... I know Bill Austin was the coach at one point for Andy. I don't know if he was there when Buddy Parker was there. I don't know. But... Now you recall what the Steelers in 69 wanted to do. It's early January 69. The Steelers offered the job to somebody else. They offered it to Joe Paterno. Chuck Knoll was recommended by Don Shula. So that is that's the lineage of that. Andy Russell joins us. Andy, thanks a lot for carving out a few minutes for it. I appreciate it very much.
No problem. Good to talk to you, Steve.
Andy, obviously, with the passing of Chuck Knoll, it is a great story. You were a good player, a really good player for the Steelers, but they weren't going anywhere. He comes in. He changed your stance, your footwork. What did he do, and what difference did it make?
Well, his mantra was always success is in the details, and I'll never forget the first year he was there in 1969. He was also the linebacker coach, and he took me over, and he said, "I want to watch your stance over the tight end," and he said, "I want you to move your foot 2 inches to the right and 1 foot, 1 inch back." I was like, "What? That's going to help me stop a 245-pound tight end?" And he thought it would, and it did.
It was an interesting time because, as I was chronicling before, the Steelers in the '60s, and you were, and obviously you were there all the way through. I mean, it was a big deal when they made the playoff bowl 1 year in '63. He comes in to coach. All right, and so you go through a coaching change. What was your initial feel, and then when did you gain confidence in him?
Well, I liked him right away. He had called me into his office in the off season prior to the training camp, and I went over to see him, and I was so naive. I thought he was going to compliment me for making my first Pro Bowl, and that's not exactly what he was doing. And he said, I sat down across from his desk, and he said, "Russell, I've been watching the game films since I took the job, and I don't like the way you play. You're too aggressive. You're out of control, and you're trying to make the big play, and I'm going to have to change the way you play, and I think I'll make you a much better player in your 30s than you were in your 20s." And he did.
That's amazing. And now, I mentioned earlier, a 1-13 becomes a 5-9, becomes a 6-8. And then at that point, things take off. In today's culture, what do you think would happen to a 1-13, 5-9, and 6-8 coach after his third year?
Well, as you can see, I think one of the most dramatic changes that happened was that our drafts got better and better every year, starting with Joe Green in 1969. I think he's the player of the decade. No player did more for his team than Joe Green did for the Steelers. And so I think, they might consider, firing the guy, but after records like that, then they got that tremendously good draft in 72 with Franco Harris coming in, and everything changed indeed.
I've talked about the Steeler dynasty, of which you were the first in the first half of it, the first two Super Bowls, but that the rule changes that opened up the game, and then he changed the Steelers' style of play offensively. How important was it that he understood to adapt to his talent?
Well, I think he was a really intelligent man who was into all the details, and I think he could handle any of the new changes. You know, the game has changed dramatically since I played. We were allowed to play pass defense back in those days. I mean, today you're not allowed any kind of contact with a receiver, and it's almost impossible to cover them. So the scores are 38-36. And, you know, we had, by last year, we had five shutouts. I mean, that's just incredible today.
Yeah, and nobody would get five shutouts today. It won't be five shutouts in a season today. By the entire league. Was he an easy guy to get to know off the field?
Well, no, because he really didn't want to become pals with his players. I mean, he was a very serious guy. He wanted to have a business-like relationship with us, and we went through that first season 1-13. We lost 13 games in a row, but he never lost us. And I really have always said that I think the reason was that he always told us the truth. You know, he was just very honest, straightforward, and like his first speech to us was, "I've been watching the game film since I took the job, but I can tell you guys why you've been losing." And we were just shocked. You know, he knew why we were losing, because we had been asking ourselves that question for 3 or 4 years. And he said, "The reason you've been losing is you're not any good." and I'm going to have to get rid of most of you. Well, five of us made it from that room to the Super Bowl in 74.
Right, I know. And that's one of the things that they have to do, and you were able to survive through that. Was he easier to get to know once you were out of the game and he was out of the game?
Well, yeah, I mean, because I would call him once a year at least, and invite him to dinner, and Ray Manson and I would take him out to dinner, and of course we'd ask him a lot of questions that we couldn't have asked when we were playing, and he was very open and honest with us, so it was interesting.
Okay, what did you learn at a couple of those dinners that either confirmed or denied something you thought?
Oh no, we'd ask him, why'd you cut so and so, or why'd you trade that guy, and we just had differing. All players don't always agree with the coaches. No, and then we would also talk about different defensive strategies that they had put in for some important games. And you know, it's players make mistakes all the time, but coaches do too. I mean, it's not always just the players that make the mistakes. So he was willing to nod his head and say, "Yeah, I think you're right." You know, on occasion.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever ask him about Terry Hanratty and 4th-and-9 at the end of Super Bowl X?
No, I didn't ask him that question. That was an interesting play, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think he showed confidence in the defense. I'm gonna. How about if I say that? I think he showed confidence in the defense.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, for him, when you look at great coaches, Greg Popovich, for example, we just watched the Spurs win, and the Spurs were all up on the podium. Ownership was there, and then ownership backed up, and it was just the players up there. Greg Popovich never once went up on the podium. He stayed back by the scoring table. Was that essentially Chuck Knoll's style, to stay out of the limelight as much as possible, only do what you had to do?
Yes, it was. He never wanted to promote himself in any way. He didn't want publicity. He didn't want to be doing TV ads, or he was offered to do things, where people wanted him on billboards and so forth. And he wasn't into that. He was strictly a teacher, a businessman who believed in success was in the details. And he that was his drive. And he was a wonderful coach. I love the guy.
And success in the details. Was he a life lessons guy? Was he a guy that a couple things that you do today say, you know what, yeah, that's because Chuck talked to me about things like that?
Oh, I think we all took a lot from when we retired from football to our businesses. In those days, we all had to have our own business or work for another company. And we took that success is in the details to a high level. I know I did, and it worked for me.
Has Chuck Knoll received his just due over the decades for what he did with the Steelers, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think exactly he got enough credit. He was never chosen the coach of the year or that type of thing, but I thought he deserved it many years. He of course is in the NFL Hall of Fame, which is quite impressive, and he deserves it, of course. And I would say he certainly would be in the top five best coaches ever. My own opinion, he is the best coach ever, because he's the only one to ever have to win four Super Bowls in 6 years. And that,
and I think
that
on that note,
never,
that's the perfect
that
way to end it, because
again,
in the end, that's part of his legacy. Andy, thanks a lot for carving out a few minutes. I know it's an emotional time for everybody who knew this great man.
Okay, Steve. Yep. Thanks for the call.
Andy Russell, former Steeler great. And we'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, at News Radio 1070 WKOK. Thanks to Andy Russell for carving out a few minutes to talk about the legendary head coach Chuck Knoll. When you talk about the greats of all time, you'll always hear about Don Shula, 347 wins. You'll hear about Vince Lombardi, 5 championships in 7 years. You'll hear about George Halas. You'll hear about Bill Walsh. You'll hear about Paul Brown. Those are the names that will come to the front when you talk. And Bill Belichick, obviously, would be in that mix as well. You might even hear more about Bill Parcells. Chuck Knoll's name does not get thrown in as often as it should. And, again, when you take nothing and you make it into something, and then you adapt to keep making it something, that tells you how special that individual is that's running the operation. Chuck Knoll took over nothing. The Pittsburgh Steelers had Andy Russell and virtually nobody else. They had a good quarterback in the 60s by the name of Bill Nelson. Okay? Bill Nelson was a good quarterback. Eventually went to the Cleveland Browns, and when they had more talent, you know, Bill Nelson played a lot better. And they had Andy Russell on defense and Ray Mansfield at center. That was it. They didn't have much. And came in. He was a great talent evaluator that helped them draft some of the guys that they drafted to turn things around. And then when they achieved success, they changed the rules in the middle of the game defensively. And as Andy said, you really can't play a lot of defense. You can't play defense the way they were allowed to play defense in the 60s and early 70s. I mean, they're trying to open up the game and make it a free-flowing game as much as possible. Chuck Knoll was the first one to adapt to that, not defensively, but offensively. He said, that's it, okay? If they're going to do this, I'm going to put the ball in Terry Bradshaw's hands, and I'm going to put the ball into the hands of Lynn Swann and John Stallworth as often as possible. I mean, to do that in the middle. When Lombardi won the same way for all 5 times. There's nothing wrong with that. That's still greatness, without a doubt. But Chuck Knoll won with the talent he had at hand, and he did it in 2 different ways. That's what makes that 4 Super Bowls in 6 years, to me, the most remarkable feat that I've seen in the NFL. The adaptability, because they won one way and came right back when the rules changed and won it a different way.